Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter. Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Exodus chapter 27. I'm going to do the entire chapter today, verses 1 through 21. We're going to look at the bronze altar of burnt offering. We're going to look at the courtyard, and we're going to look at the oil that is to be put into the lampstand, which is into the lamp, which is kept in the holy place. Our context is this. God is in the midst of telling Moses how to build the tabernacle and its furniture. He's on top of Mount Sinai, his sojourn up there for 40 days and 40 nights. In our previous chapter, chapter 26, last half of the verse, we looked at the frame of the tabernacle, the four coverings that went over the tabernacle, the linen covering, the goat's hair covering, the ram's skin dyed red covering, and the sea cow or porpoise covering on the top, four coverings. And so that's where we are now. We start with verses 1 and 2. And you shall make the altar, God tells Moses. You shall make the altar of acacia wood. And this is not the golden altar of incense that's in the tabernacle at the doorway between the holy place and the holy of holies. This is the bronze altar of burnt offering, which is in the courtyard, in the front of the outer gate of the tabernacle, in the eastern end of the courtyard. You shall make the altar of acacia wood 5 cubits long and 5 cubits wide. The altar shall be square, and its height shall be 3 cubits. You shall make its horns on its four corners. Its horns shall be of one piece with it, and you shall overlay it with bronze. Now let's look at the translation that has English measurements rather than cubits. That's the Holman Christian Study Bible. In verse 1 here, Exodus 27, you are to construct the altar of acacia wood. The altar must be square, 7.5 feet long, 7.5 feet wide. It must be 4.5 feet high. Now, 7.5 feet long and 7.5 feet wide is rather big for roasting animals, I must say. 4.5 feet high is just high enough to have a lot of room for ashes underneath the bronze grate that we're going to look at in a minute where the animals will put. So it's high enough to put that halfway down. And it's still, nevertheless, low enough so a priest could lift up a sacrifice. 4.5 feet is not going to kill him to get it up that high on the altar. So the altar was of a convenient size, big enough for lots of sacrifices, but low enough so that the priest could do their job. We're going to see later it was hollow, which made it a little easier to carry than if it were solid. Now we look at some other scriptures that tell us more about this altar of burnt offering. There's lots of them, actually. I'm going to give you three here out of Leviticus 4. Leviticus 4, 7, second part of the verse. All the blood of the bull, he, that's the priest, shall pour out at the base of the altar of burnt offering, which is at the doorway of the tent of meeting. Tent of meeting, of course, is the tabernacle. Leviticus 4:10, just as it, referring to the fat, just as the fat is removed from the ox of the sacrifice of peace offerings, and the priest is to offer them, referring to two kidneys of the ox and the fatty lobe of liver of the ox, the priest is to offer them up in smoke on the altar of burnt offering. Leviticus 4:18, he, referring to the priest, shall put some of the blood on the horns of the altar, which is before the Lord in the tent of meeting, and all the blood he shall pour out at the base of the altar of burnt offering, which is at the doorway of the tent of meeting. Now, from this, we gather that there's three main activities going on with this bronze altar of burnt offering. First of all, you have the sacrifice of the animal itself on the altar. Second of all, you have blood sprinkled on the horns. And third of all, you have blood poured, the blood of the sacrificial animal poured out at the base of the offering. Doesn't that sound like the martyrs in Revelation 6? They were at the base of the altar. Well, they were before the altar, in front of the altar, where their blood was poured out. Now, the altar of burnt offering had four horns on each corner. The symbolism of that, according to the NIV Study Bible, is help and refuge. Let's look at three examples in the Old Testament. 1 Kings 1:50, and Adonijah was afraid of Solomon, and he arose, went, and took hold of the horns of the altar. Well, why would he do that? Because he was scared. Adonijah was scared Solomon was going to whack him. So he went to the horns of the altar for protection. 1 Kings 2:28, and the news came to Joab, for Joab had followed Adonijah, although he had not followed Absalom. And Joab fled to the tent of the Lord, took hold of the horns of the altar. Because he had rebelled, he was in trouble, and he wanted to not get killed. Psalm 18:2, the Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation. A horn is a symbol of strength in general, and the horns of the altar is a place of refuge because God is strong and able to give refuge to people who seek refuge there. The horns of the altar also represent the atoning power of the altar. Some of the blood was put on the horns before it was poured out at the base, according to the NIV Study Bible. Now, I'm going to give you lots of examples of this, about the blood being put on the horns. Exodus 29:12, you shall take some of the blood of the bull and put it on the horns of the altar with your finger, and you shall pour out all the blood at the base of the altar. Well, we're going to look at scriptures that show blood on the horns and also blood at the base. Leviticus 4:25, then the priest is to take some of the blood of the sin offering with his finger and put it on the horns of the altar of burnt offering, and the rest of the blood he shall pour out at the base of the altar of burnt offering. So this is a symbol of the atoning power of the blood. Leviticus 4:30, the priest shall take some of the blood with his finger and put it on the horns of the altar of burnt offering, and all the rest of the blood he shall pour out at the base of the altar. Leviticus 4:34, the priest is to take some of the blood of the sin offering with his finger and put it on the horns of the altar of the burnt offering, and all the rest of the blood he shall pour out at the base of the altar. You'll notice a little bit of repetition here. It's amazing how often this is stated in the Old Testament. I'm still not finished. Leviticus 8:15. Now Moses slaughtered it and took the blood and with his finger put some of it around the horns of the altar and purified the altar. Then he poured out the rest of the blood at the base of the altar and consecrated it to make atonement for it. Leviticus 9:9. Aaron's sons presented the blood to him, and he dipped his finger in the blood and put some on the horns of the altar and poured out the rest of the blood at the base of the altar. Leviticus 16:18, then he shall go out to the altar that is before the Lord and make atonement for it, and he shall take some of the blood of the bull and of the blood of the goat and put it on the horns of the altar at all sides. Didn't mention pouring out the blood in the front, but I think you see the pattern. Blood on the horns and blood at the base. Sprinkle on the horns and pour it at the base. There were some other practical purposes of these horns besides their symbolic reference, their symbolism referring to help and refuge and atoning power. The horns also had practical purposes. Whatever was on the altar is not going to fall off if you got the horns there. It was also a place, the horns were a method, a place for the sacrificial animals to be tied to, as John Gill, Adam Clark, and Jameson Foss and Brown also all say, quoting Psalm 118:27, the Lord is God and he has given us light. Bind the festival sacrifice with cords to the horns of the altar. Adam Clark says there might be another practical purpose, just to make it look good as ornaments. I don't know. I look at pictures of the thing. The horns don't look all that beautiful to me. Maybe they do to somebody else. Now, verse 2 says this acacia wood altar is to be covered with bronze, thus is named the bronze altar. Why? Well, that's to keep the acacia wood from burning up. Acacia wood's hard, but if you burn enough animals on it, you're going to burn the altar up, so the bronze keeps that from happening. We go now to Exodus 27:3. You shall make its, that's the bronze altar of burnt offering, you shall make its pails for removing its ashes, and its shovels, and its basins, and its forks, and its fire pans. You shall make all of its utensils of bronze. So the utensils match the altar. They're made out of bronze. Let's see what each utensil might do. The pails, the NIV translates it as pots. Well, this is my speculation. They could have stood under the grating to collect the ashes. We'll look at the grating in just a minute. But the animal was burned on a bronze grating, and ashes could have fallen through. And you put the pails under there, collect the ashes, and then carry them out to a clean place outside the camp. Leviticus 4:12, that is all the rest of the bull, that's the sin offering, he is to bring out to a clean place outside the camp where the ashes are poured out. So there was a place outside the camp where they poured out the ashes. And that sin offering was to be burned on fire. Where the ashes are poured out, it shall be burned. So there was a special place for the ashes. The pails, I assume, would be used to carry the ashes to that place. Now, I don't know that the pails were actually put up under that bronze grating to collect the ashes. Maybe they had to shovel the ashes from under the grating to put the ashes in pails. It could be. Shovels are mentioned next as the second utensil. That would be for removing the ashes. You're going to have shovels to move ashes around, to shovel ashes into the pail. The next utensil that's mentioned in verse 3 is a basin, or basins, plural. The NIV has sprinkling bowls. This is to catch the blood of slain animals in order to sprinkle the blood at the base of the altar, which we've mentioned already many times. And then the next utensil that's mentioned is forks. The NIV has meat forks. The NIV Study Bible says these are three-pronged forks that were used in arranging the sacrifice on the bronze grating, and also to remove the priest portion from the fire, or actually from the boil pot where it was being boiled on the fire, so that the priest could eat it. We see this in 1 Samuel 2:13-14. And the custom of the priest with the people, when any man was offering a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come while the meat was boiling with a three-pronged fork in his hand. That's how the NIV Study Bible knows it's three prongs. Three-pronged fork in his hand, then he would thrust it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot All that the fork brought up, the priest would take for himself. Thus they did in Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there. So that's the forks for moving the meat around on the grill, on the bronze netting. Next utensil that's mentioned is fire pans. Fire pan was used to carry fire from the altar of burnt offering to the golden altar of incense, according to the NIV Study Bible and John Gill. How do we know that? We look at Leviticus 16:12-13. He, that's a priest, or a Levite, shall take, I'm not sure which it is actually, let me check. It's a priest. He shall take a fire pan full of coals of fire from upon the altar before the Lord and two handfuls of finely ground sweet incense and bring it inside the veil. He shall put, I'm assuming that veil is the outer veil to the courtyard. He comes from the altar burnt offering with a fire pan full of fire, full of coals. And then in verse 13, Leviticus 16, he shall put the incense on the fire, that's the fire on the golden altar, before the Lord, that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is on the Ark of the Testimony, otherwise he will die. So that's what the fire pans are for. We go now to Exodus 27, verses 4 through 5. You shall make for it, for the altar of bronze, a grating of network of bronze, and on the net you shall make four bronze rings at its four corners. You shall put it underneath, under the ledge of the altar, so that the net will reach halfway up the altar. Now, I don't know about you, but when I first read that, I was totally confused. I got a picture that solves it very quickly. I'm going to assume this is correct, because I believe it is. I'm looking right now at the picture. I'm trying to describe it for you. The bronze altar consists of four wooden sides, hollow in the middle. You look down the top in the hollow. You go down halfway, and there's a bronze grating there. A mesh, if you will. Not fine mesh, but the holes are relatively big. That, of course, is speculation. And so, since the altar is hollow and you look down halfway down the sides and you see this bronze grating there, that means you have a large ledge from midway up the hollow to the top of the hollow, and that would be where you put the wood and the animals that are going to be sacrificed. And so they would be secure with that ledge there. And then, of course, on the four corners of the ledge, you have the four horns. So the grating is the focus of the altar, as John Gill says, because that's where the sacrifice and the wood were placed. Now, these four rings that are mentioned, four bronze rings, everything's bronze. Network is bronze. It says network in the NASB. It's like a grate, if you will. It's bronze. And then you have four bronze rings at the four corners of the network. I'm assuming those four rings are halfway down the sides of the altar. And the ring is placed at the corners, which would be under the horns. Four bronze rings at the four corners. And through that, the poles are inserted through those four rings so that the Levites could carry the altar when they broke camp. Now, there is another option as to where these rings could be. These rings could be on the four corners of the grating on the inside of the hollow altar, and then there could be some kind of a chain that goes down from the four horns of the altar down to the ring on each corner, and so the chain would hold up the bronze grating from sinking further down into the hollow altar, and you could pick up on those chains. The Levites could pick the grating out and then clean out the ashes underneath the grate. That's John Gill's solution. I don't really think so. I think this picture I've got is better where the four rings are on the outside, not on the inside holding up the grating, but on the outside at the corners of the grating, in other words, halfway up the hollow box, and they were used for carrying the bronze altar. Now, notice the fact that this bronze netting was halfway down the altar. That's 1.5 cubits down. That's 2 feet and 3 inches down from the top. That leaves a lot of space because you're talking about a 7.5 by 7.5 foot square. 7.5 by 7.5 square and 2 feet deep, you can put a lot of barbecue, a lot of sacrifices on such a fire. We go down to Exodus 27, verses 6 through 8. You shall make poles for the altar, poles of acacia wood, and overlay them with bronze. That's how, whenever you see a pole in this description of the tabernacle and its implements, it's always acacia wood and covered with gold. Well, actually, not always covered with gold, because here they're covered with bronze to match the bronze altar. Verse 7, its poles shall be inserted into the rings, so that the poles shall be on the two sides of the altar when it is carried. You shall make it hollow with planks, as it was shown to you on the mountain, so they shall make it. Now, if these rings might be the same rings that we just talked about in the previous verse, but if the rings in the previous verse were referring to rings holding up the grating, then these are obviously different rings. Now, when the bronze altar was carried with those poles, it was covered with a purple cloth. We see that in Numbers 4:13. Then they shall take away the ashes from the altar and spread a purple cloth over it. Kind of nice. Purple stands for the king. A royal cloth covering the altar. Now here, verse 8 explicitly says the bronze altar was hollow. Some people say that the altar was perhaps filled with dirt inside that hollow. The NIV Study Bible and John Gill disagrees with that. They say that would seem to destroy the purpose of the grating. What do you need dirt to hold the animal up when you got the grating? And plus, it would cover the grating up. And it would not let ashes fall through to the bottom so they could be shoveled out into the pails and carried out outside the camp and placed in the place where all ashes were kept. And it would not make the altar very portable. They'd have to fill it up with dirt every time they moved. What a pain. But being hollow like this, it made the bronze altar of burnt offering, it made it light and portable. Wouldn't be so portable if it was filled with earth. We go now to Exodus 27:9-11. We're finished with the altar of burnt offering, the bronze altar of burnt offering, and now we are at the courtyard. And ladies and gentlemen, this one's going to be tough. But here we go, verses 9-11. You shall make the court of the tabernacle. That's the courtyard that's around the tabernacle. On the south side there shall be hangings for the court of fine twisted linen, 100 cubits long for one side, and its pillars shall be 20, with their 20 sockets of bronze. The hooks of the pillars and their bands shall be of silver. Likewise, for the north side in length there shall be hangings 100 cubits long, and its 20 pillars with their 20 sockets of bronze. The hooks of the pillars and their bands shall be of silver. All right, first of all, just to simplify this, on the south side and the north side, exactly the same. We need to remember that the tabernacle is facing east, and so that's where the doorway was. And so we've got to look at that. And the east side is going to cause us all kinds of problems when we get there. The west side is relatively easy. It's the back side, the side that's closest to the back end of the Holy of Holies. Now, let's start out by getting a feel for the measurements. The NASB has it in cubits, and we'll use cubits because they're even, and feet are not, because a cubit is a foot and a half. But using the Holman Christian Study Bible, we see the south side is 150 feet long on that side, and we haven't gotten to the east and west side yet. That's in a later verse. That'll be 75 feet. Now, you can look at a lot of pictures of the courtyard, and almost every one of them's wrong, because there's a problem here. The scripture gives us explicitly that the length of the north and south sides was 100 cubits, and the scripture explicitly says that there are 20 pillars or 20 posts that hold up the curtain along that length of 100 cubits. Well, if you sit down and try to draw that out, if you have 20, you can't just divide 20 into 100 and get 5 cubits between each post. I wish I had a picture. I can't show this to you, but you end up, if you have 20 posts, you end up with 19 5-cubit spaces between, which is 95 cubits, which is not 100 cubits, if you have 20 posts. So you say, oh, well, we need to have 100 cubits. Oh, I'll add a post. Well, now you got 100 cubits, 5 cubits between the post, but now you got 21 posts. And the scripture here says 20 posts. Well, this is something that could drive you crazy, and I've got the answer to it, but there's a lot of people that are confused by it, and I found the guy that solved it for me. I think he solved it for me. I don't think I solved this myself. I might have found him afterwards, but I'm not going to. I think it's too difficult for somebody of my intelligence to figure out. I think it took somebody else. And he said, and I don't have the brother's name, I got his website address, but he said that it flummoxed him for years before he could figure it out. So this is kind of fun. It's like a puzzle. So we're going to have to solve that puzzle. Now we know that each north and south side is 100 cubits. How do we know that the east and west ends are 50 cubits? Well, we have to go to Exodus to see that. Exodus 27:12. For the width of the court on the west side shall be hangings of 50 cubits with their 10 pillars. And again, you got the same problem. 50 cubits, 10 pillars doesn't add up. You either have 10 pillars and 45 cubits wide, or you have 50 cubits and 11 pillars. But we'll solve it in just a minute. Exodus 27:18, the length of the court shall be 100 cubits, which we already know, and the width 50 throughout, and the height, now we know the height, 5 cubits of fine twisted linen. At least that's not complicated. The height's 5 cubits high, 7.5 feet high, is the courtyard all around. So let's put it in English units to get a feel for it. 100 cubits, that's 150 feet long. That's about 50 yards, which is half a football field long. And we've got 75 feet wide on the ends. Now, the interesting thing about the height of this courtyard curtain is that it's 5 cubits, whereas the tabernacle itself was 10 cubits high. We know in Exodus, well, we know from a previous chapter in Exodus that we looked at in great detail, Exodus 26:16, 10 cubits shall be the length of each board. That's the board that's the boards that stand up on the side of the tabernacle. 10 cubits. So the tabernacle is 10 cubits high. The courtyard curtain is 5 cubits high. Well, that's nice because everybody can see the tabernacle from outside the court. It'll keep people out from trespassing in the holy precincts of the tabernacle, but at the same time, everybody could see the center of their Old Testament worship. So that's nice. That's not a problem. Now, this screen that runs around the courtyard curtain, it was made of fine linen. It did not have the blue, purple, and scarlet like all the other linen, the linen covering that goes over the tabernacle, the linen screen over the doorway to the Holy of Holies from the holy place, and the outer doorway. All that had blue, purple, and scarlet, but this just says fine linen, so we assume it doesn't have all the various colors. It's just white, and most of the pictures, I think, just have it as white. And I think it's just white because think of all the work it would be. This is a huge, long curtain. To embroider all that would have taken a lifetime. So we're going to assume it's white linen. John Gill says it's linen that's 6 times twisted. I have no idea how he knows that. John Gill and Adam Clark say that the linen was woven into a kind of a network. In other words, not solid white, but kind of a see-through pattern. Adam Clark said people could see through it. I don't know how he knows that, but that's interesting. Now, in verse 10, we see that the pillars have sockets of bronze. Now, well, first of all, let's talk about how many pillars. It's 20 on the north side, 20 on the south side. That's 40. 10 on the east side, 10 on the west side, that's 20 more. 40 plus 20 is 60. So there's 60 pillars, and each pillar had a socket of bronze, and each pillar had a hook at the top. It says in verse 10, the hooks of the pillars and their band shall be of silver. Now, a hook on the top of the post would be to hang the linen curtain on, the linen screen that goes around the courtyard. But this word bands is very confusing. The King James says fillet, F-I-L-L-E-T, and what it means is a solid rod that runs from the top of one post to the top of the next post so that the curtains, the screen, could be hung on that silver band. Now notice the hooks at the top of the courtyard screen were silver compared to the gold hooks which were used to hold the inner veil, the so-called second veil of the tabernacle that divided the holy place from the Holy of Holies. That was real close to God in the Holy of Holies. Those were gold hooks. We read that in Exodus 26:32. Hang it, the inner veil, on 4 gold-plated pillars of acacia wood that have gold hooks and that stand on 4 silver bases. So the outside curtain of the courtyard had a bronze base and a silver top, whereas the screen, the curtain that separated the holy place from the Holy of Holies, had a silver base and a gold top. More valuable metal because you're closer to God in the Holy of Holies. Now we can also compare the courtyard screen to the first veil, the veil of the outer doorway facing east as you go out from the tabernacle into the courtyard. That veil, the first veil, the doorway veil, we read about in Exodus 26:37, make 5 pillars of acacia wood for the screen and overlay them with gold. Their hooks are to be gold and you're to cast 5 bronze bases for them. So the bases were the same bronze, but the hooks were gold, not silver, because it's still a little bit closer than the courtyard hooks. So you see the pattern here. The more valuable metal, the more you get closer to the center of a focus of attention, the more valuable the metal gets. And, of course, God is the center of attention in that ark in the Holy of Holies. We go down to chapter 27, verses 12 through 13. For the width of the court of the west side shall be hangings of 50 cubits. With their 10 pillars and their 10 sockets, the width of the court on the east side shall be 50 cubits. Now remember, the courtyard is facing east. The tabernacle is facing east. That means the Holy of Holies is probably in the central part of the western half of the courtyard. The altar of burnt offering is further east in the most central part of the eastern half. This is according to the NIV Study Bible. I have no reason to doubt that. Now we go to Exodus 27, verses 14 through 15. The hangings for the one side of the gate shall be 15 cubits with their three pillars and their three sockets. And for the other side shall be hangings of 15 cubits with their three pillars and their three sockets. The hangings, I'm assuming, is this white linen curtain, not the blue, purple, and scarlet of the doorway screen. 50 cubits on each side. If the total is 50 cubits, and you got 15 cubits on each side, that's 30. That leaves 20 cubits for the gateway, for the doorway. Now, we come to the bodaciously difficult problem that I told you I was going to resolve of how can you have 100 cubits on a side and only 20 posts? And how can you have 50 cubits on an end and only 10 posts? It just doesn't work. And I can't describe it to you. If you look at it, you see that the math doesn't add up. Well, here's the answer right here. I have got a layout of the courtyard, and I'm going to start in the northwest. Well, let me see now. If I'm facing east, that would be the, let's do it this way. The courtyard is facing east, and I'm going to put east to the top of my screen here so I can talk as if I'm talking like going around a clock, even though we usually think of the top being north. I'm going to have the east at the top, okay? So I'm going to start at the leftmost post in the upper left-hand corner. I'm going to start counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. All right, I'm finished now. 10 posts on the eastern side, but I've only got 45 cubits, 9 spaces. But that's okay, because now I'm going to start counting to go down the south side. I'm going to start counting, and I add another post, which gives me 11 posts on the east, and 50 cubits, 5 cubit spaces, 10 5 cubit spaces with 11 posts. I'm going to start counting, and then I'm going to start counting down the south side. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. But that only leaves me 19 spaces. 5 cubits each, that's 95. And I need 100. So what do? I add another post. I have 100 cubits, and now I start counting across the bottom from right to left. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Well, now I've got 10 posts, but I've only got 45 cubits. So what do? I put another post down there, and we'll start that as counting up on the northern side of the wall. So now I've got 11 posts at the bottom, but I've got 5 spaces, 5 cubits each. 5 cubits each for a total of 50 cubits. So I start counting up, going north. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Oh, that stops me right before the first post I started at, which is right above me by 5 cubits. So what you end up with is 21 posts on the north, 21 posts on the south, 11 on the north, 11 on the south. That makes all of the spacing come out right, 100 by 50 by 100 by 50. It also makes the numbering come out right when you count. Now, I know you couldn't see this, and you might not be able to follow it orally, but let me give you a web page, sickleoftruth.com, sickleoftruth.com/tabernacle. Look that up, and he solves it that way, and I think he does it exactly right. So now we go to Exodus 27, verse 16. For the gate of the court, there shall be a screen of 20 cubits. Remember, the gate is 20 cubits wide. 15 to the left, 15 cubits to the left, 15 cubits to the right, and 20 in the middle for a total of 50. So the gate will have 20 cubits of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen, the work of a weaver, with their four pillars, and that's going to be a problem, four pillars and their four sockets. Well, first of all, let's take the easy part of this verse, blue, purple, and scarlet. Those are royal colors, as the NIV Study Bible points out. Even to this day, I would say they're royal colors. The dyes for the blue and the purple come from the Mediterranean shellfish, which is primarily the murex, as the NIV Study Bible says. The dyeing industry was so important back then in the ancient Near East. It was mainly located on the Levant, the shores of the Mediterranean north of Israel. And that dyeing industry was so important that it gave the Promised Land two famous names, both of which mean land of purple. Canaan means land of purple, and Phoenicia means land of purple. Now, this blue, purple, and scarlet was the same as other parts of the tabernacle. First of all, you got the screen over the entrance to the holy place. That's the first veil, the outer doorway, the outside doorway that opens from the tabernacle into the courtyard. Exodus 26:36, you shall make a screen for the doorway of the tent of blue and purple and scarlet material and fine twisted linen. So there you have the outer doorway. Now we'll go to the inner veil. which is the entrance to the Holy of Holies from the holy place, Exodus 26:31. You are to make a curtain of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, and finely spun linen. And the inner tabernacle itself, and what I mean by that is the linen material that covered the framework. The whole tabernacle itself is huge. Two sections of linen, each a cubit and a half wide. Each 20 cubits wide, pieced together. Exodus 26:1, you are to construct the tabernacle itself with 10 curtains, 10 coverings. You must make them of finely spun linen, and blue and purple and scarlet. So you see blue and purple and scarlet, all the king colors of a king, over the top of the tabernacle and on the two doorways, the two screens, the two curtains of the tabernacle. Now the courtyard, as I said, is not like this. It's white. Now there's one distinction also, or possible distinction. The outer door does not have cherubim. At least it doesn't say so. The inner veil and also the first linen covering over the whole tabernacle, they had cherubim, but not the outer door. I think it probably had cherubim, just wasn't mentioned. So anyway, that's blue, purple, and scarlet. And now we want to deal with this problem of four. Now, if you will look at my diagram, you can't see it, but if it were possible for you to look at my diagram where I had 11 posts on the north and 21 posts down the sides and 11 posts on the back, here's what you would see. You would see at the eastern side, you would see 1, 2, 3, 4 posts making three spaces of 5 cubits. There's your 15 cubits on the left. Then you would see 1, 2, 3, 4 more posts, which including the third post coming from the left would make a total of 5 posts with 4 spaces in between for a total of 20 cubits. And then you would go to the right and keep counting 1, 2, 3, and you'd be at the edge, at the end of that row of posts, and that would be 15 more cubits. The problem is that when you look at it, I've marked it out in green on my picture, it's 5 posts, not 4 posts. Well, here's the answer to that. If you're counting from the left to make up that 15 cubits to the left, 1, 2, 3, that first post is the end of the 15 cubit length. So you can't count that as part of the doorway, even though it's the start of the doorway, you can't count it because it's already been counted for the left for 15 cubits. So then you go to the right and you go 1, 2, 3, 4, there's your 4 posts of the doorway. And then you count again 1, 2, 3 to get to the edge. That's your total of 11 posts, and you're at the edge of the eastern end of the tabernacle, and you got 15 more cubits. I know that's very hard to follow orally, but it works perfectly. And again, this is all described at sickleoftruth.com/tabernacle if you want to really get into this. You probably don't. It's like a puzzle to me. I'm really interested. I'm interested in it for apologetic reasons because I can see a liberal, theological liberal saying, see there, the scripture has contradictions in it because Exodus 26:37 says there's 5 pillars in the gateway, and here in Exodus 27, there's 4 pillars, 4 posts. It's a contradiction. So let's take God off his throne. Let's be an atheist. Let's jump into hell. We don't care. Well, let me read Exodus 27:37. Make 5 pillars of acacia wood for the screen. 5 pillars. Whereas our verse here in Exodus 27:16 says with their 4 pillars. So it does sound like a contradiction, but if you sit down and take the trouble, you can reconcile it. And this is what I say. Most people don't take the trouble. They just say, oh, see there's an error, and I'm not going to try to figure it out, and I'm going to go to hell because I don't like to serve God. I want to fornicate with whoever I want to. Verse 20, at chapter 27, verses 17 through 19 of Exodus, all the pillars around the court shall be furnished with silver bands, with their hooks of silver and their sockets of bronze. We've already talked about that. The length of the court shall be 100 cubits, and the width 50 throughout, and the height 5 cubits of fine twisted linen and their sockets of bronze. All the utensils of the tabernacle used in all of it, in all its service, and all its pegs, and all the pegs of the court shall be of bronze. Now let's look at the silver bands again. That's contrast to the gold-covered post of the tabernacle, actually of the screens of the tabernacle. Silver at the top of the courtyard post, gold at the top of the tabernacle doorway post, inner and outer veils. Why? Because gold's closer to the Holy of Holies. Less valuable metal we use, the further away from the Holy of Holies we get. I've already mentioned that the bands are the silver rods connecting the top of the post on the in the courtyard screen. The hooks at the top of each post, of course, is to hold the curtains. The curtains are also tied to the rods, too. I've already mentioned that the 5 cubits was half the height of the tabernacle, which protect the sanctity and privacy of worship going on the inside while still allowing people to see what's inside. The bronze sockets of the courtyard post are in contrast to the silver sockets of the tabernacle post, because the silver sockets are closer to the Holy of Holies than the courtyard bronze sockets. Also notice that the silver sockets of the tabernacle are in contrast to the gold tenons of the boards which are inserted into the sockets, as we talked about in the last chapter. The less valuable metal is closest to the dirt. This is my observation. I hadn't read this anywhere, but it makes sense. You got it's silver close to the dirt, gold is a little bit closer to God. We also can contrast the bronze sockets of the courtyard post with the silver tops of the courtyard post. That which in the ground is farther from God, who is in the air in heaven. Again, that's my idea. But the scheme is so neat how it works. The closer you get to God, the more valuable the stuff is. Utensils are mentioned again in verse 19. All the utensils are the tabernacle. What are those utensils? Well, there's a couple of options. This could be a mere repetition of Exodus 27:3. This is the first option. Exodus 27:3, which we've already mentioned, make its pots for removing ashes and its shovels, basins, meat forks, and fire pans. We've already mentioned all that. So this could just be a mere repetition, but it could include, as option number two, some more utensils of the tabernacle, the tools used to set up and take down the tabernacle. And if so, that would make sense that they were bronze. It would make sense that any utensil's bronze. You're not going to make a utensil out of gold or silver. They're stronger. Bronze is stronger than gold and silver. Gold and silver utensils would have worn out. Now, these tools were used to set up and take down the tabernacle, I guess like hammers, to hammer the pegs down in the ground. Oh, I didn't mention the pegs, by the way. Well, here we go. Pegs are mentioned right here. That's the last thing I want to talk about in this verse. Tent pegs. They're just like tent pegs. You ever gone camping? You hammer the peg into the loop in the corner of the tent, stretch the tent out. Well, likewise, you got to have cords tied to the tops of these courtyard posts to make the courtyard steady, the courtyard screen steady. You have to have cords tied to the ground with tent pegs. Likewise, the tabernacle itself, the boards of the side of the tabernacle, they're held together with acacia wood crossbars, but still you've got to put pressure on the boards, pulling down to the right and pulling down to the left to put tension on the boards of the tabernacle by hammering the ropes into the ground using pegs. We go down to Exodus 27, verses 20 through 21. You shall try. Now we're off the courtyard, thank goodness. And now we're talking about the lamp that burns in the holy place. Exodus 27, verses 20 through 21. You shall charge the sons of Israel that they bring you clear oil of beaten olives for the light, to make a lamp burn continually. In the tent of meeting outside the veil, which is before the testimony, Aaron and his sons shall keep it in order from evening to morning before the Lord. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout their generations for the sons of Israel. First of all, the oil for the lamp's got to be clear. King James says pure. Everything from God's worship, of course, should be pure. So the symbolism of that is clear. That is obvious. NIV has it in the plural. NASB has this clear oil is to make a lamp burn continually. The KJV, the NIV has to make the lamps burn continually because there were 7 lamps on the lampstand. The burning of the oil is a symbol of the Holy Spirit of God. As Adam Clark says, the light is produced by oil, and oil is a common symbol of the Holy Spirit. So you got oil burning, creating light. The Holy Spirit is the oil. The Holy Spirit creates light. Easy symbol. We can take that one to the bank. Now, these lamps burn continually. If the light ever went out, it would be totally dark in the tabernacle, which, of course, would be inappropriate because where God is, there's always light. He's light lighting up the darkness, and there's darkness inside that tabernacle. There were no windows. And another reason why the light has got to shine continually, because how are the priests going to snuff the lights and trim the wicks if it got dark in there? If they snuffed all the lights out all at once, it would be totally dark. Now, you could say that continually means not 24/7, but most of the time, every day, for every day of the week, continually, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, like that. But the lights were totally snuffed out at the change of the wicks. I don't believe so. I don't know how the priests would do that in the dark. I assume they snuffed out one wick. So now there's 6 lights burning. That's plenty of light to snuff out the second wick after you've relit the first wick, the new wick on the first lamp. Now, this is a minor controversy that Gil and Clark mentioned, but I'll go through it. Some people like to quote 1 Samuel 33 to show that the lamps did not burn 24/7, but they went out periodically and relit at night. In other words, they were burnt continually at night only, but not in the daytime. 1 Samuel 33, and the lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord where the ark of God was. Well, yeah, maybe, but maybe by the time of Samuel, the Jews had changed the proper ritual by then and started letting the lamps go out during the daytime. Adam Clark says this, the lamps were to be kept burning through the whole of the night, and some think all the day besides. But there's a difference of sentiment upon this subject. Well, okay, I think they were burning all 24/7. I like the symbolism better. Here's another way you look at it. You could say three of the lamps burned at the day and went out at night, and then the other four were lit, and they went out in the morning, so they kept it burning, but only three at a time and four at a time. I don't think so. Verse 21 says, in the tent of meeting outside the veil, which is before the testimony. That is the inner veil between the holy place and the holy of holies, the testimonies and the holy of holies. The tent of meeting is the tabernacle. And this is where the lamp's supposed to be. Outside the veil, that means that you're going from the holy of holies into the holy place, you're outside the veil. Aaron and his sons, that's the priests, shall keep it in order from evening to morning. Why is it called the tent of meeting? Because that's where God went to meet, or the children of Israel actually went to meet God at certain times. Exodus 29:42, it shall be a continual burnt offering throughout your generations at the doorway of the tent of meeting before the Lord. Well, I will meet with you to speak with you there. So they would go to the doorway in the courtyard there, and God would meet Moses and his successors there. Exodus 25:22, there I will meet with you, and from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim which are upon the ark of the testimony, I will speak to you about all that I will give you in commandment for the sons of Israel. This is before the ark, the tabernacle, was actually built. And by the way, there was a temporary tent of meeting that was built, as I learned from gotquestions.org, where Moses would meet the people. But once the tabernacle was built, there was no need for that temporary tent of meeting, and so they changed the name. They quit calling the temporary tent a tent of meeting, and they started calling the tabernacle the tent of meeting. God did the meeting, by the way, not the people. And God did it by appointment only, not by accident. You didn't ask for a meeting with God. God told the people when he was going to meet with them. Verse 21 says, in the tent of meeting outside the veil, which is before the testimony. What's the testimony? That's the tablets of the law. It's called the testimony because it testified of God's holiness. The law did. And these Ten Commandments, of course, were kept inside the ark, and the ark was kept inside the Holy of Holies. Now, one last word here in verse 21. It, this idea of keeping the lamps burning continually, it shall be a perpetual statute throughout their generations for the sons of Israel. That does not mean for eternity. Obviously not, because there's no more lamp in the holy place. It's gone now. This is understood to refer to the period during which the tabernacle existed. A perpetual statute, as long as the tabernacle exists. And of course, I'd assume that would mean after the tabernacle was gone, they built a temple to replace the tabernacle in Jerusalem, and I assume they would do the same thing, keep the lights burning continually in the temple also. But the temple's gone too, and the second temple's gone. So perpetual can't mean for eternity, forever and ever. Ladies and gentlemen, I have now finished this difficult chapter 27. We are now prepared to go to chapter 28 in our next audio, which will be a discussion of the priestly garments. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.